I didn't start the show.
Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is actor, stuntman, and pro wrestler, Al Burke.
Hello.
Are you still wrestling?
I do a little bit, mostly on special appearances. Okay. People like to call me back. I'm too old for that crap.
No, I get it.
But, you know, the crowd loves it. You know, I can't argue. Okay. And, hey, money's money.
All right. We're going to ask questions. We'll hear all about that. There's much more to Al than just the things I've mentioned so far, as you might imagine. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers today. Our guest is the very Gonzo. Al Burke.
Woohoo!
Now, I wasn't sure if I should say Gonzo, because your wrestling name is Mr. Outrageous.
That is correct.
Is that right? That's where that name has come from.
I am Mr. Outrageous, and I have earned that name, but no, I'm not going to tell you how.
Well, my question about that, it's quite a claim to call yourself Mr. Outrageous.
And I do live up to every letter of that name, believe
that
me.
That is the question, because I saw it and I said, well, what if you get up one day and you say to yourself, well, I mean, I feel pretty good today, but I'm not sure if I feel outrageous. Like, what do?
You pick it up and you become outrageous.
Okay. All right.
Every day, you know, if you don't live your life that way anyways, what's the point?
That's right.
I mean, we don't all want to be, you know, slugs laying in bed all day, even though once in a while that's okay.
Sure.
But if you want to succeed in life, pick it up and have an outrageous day.
All right. So you challenge yourself on a regular basis to live up to your outrageous moniker, because that's your personal brand is outrageous.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Right. Okay. Well, it's interesting. I was looking at your site. You know, you say Mr. Outrageous. You have this wrestling thing, the stuntman thing. But then all the photos, you are doing charity work. You're dressed as Santa Claus. You're like the nicest guy in the world.
I can be, yes. I mean, basically, we're all whores in this town. We have a price. You know, I get paid to do a different job. If I'm paid to be a good guy, I'm a good guy. I mean, it's whatever they want me to be. And normally, yeah, back in the day, I was the bad guy. I was as bad as they came.
Yeah.
And then the sad part, when The Wedding Singer came out, nobody would buy me as the bad guy anymore. That life was completely over. And believe me, I tried. I got worse.
But you were a bad guy in that movie. You were like a guy on the plane.
Yeah, but I was the good guy because I helped Robbie and Julia get together. And, you know, that was all that. But, you know, when people saw that part in the movie, they instantly, you know, came to me and like, oh, my God, you know, that's so cool. Like, shut up, I hate you. You know, I'd spit on them, you know, whatever. And they're like, oh, we don't care, you're cool. I'm like, no, I'm not, shut up.
So that movie really messed your career up.
It completely changed it. I instantly became a bad guy. I didn't want to be instantly became a good guy. I didn't want to be a good guy. I didn't. I wanted to be the bad guy. I mean, I tell everybody off. I can pick the cutest girl in the audience, have her stand up and tell her she's fat and push her down. Completely blow her ego for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
And I walk away laughing. I was known as, Mr. Outrageous, and nothing mattered to me. But then they changed, and now I'm a good guy. And even wrestling-wise now, I mean, I come out for special appearances,
right.
And everybody knows that's, you know, that movie, and... Yeah, I'm stuck with being a good guy now.
Sandler really messed your shit up.
Yeah. And he actually personally picked me. He got my reel and he looked through it and personally picked me for the movie. So, you know, I was honored with that, obviously.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
What is that life like, being a professional wrestler? I mean, for people who haven't done that job before, most people just get to watch it on TV. I mean, kids who may be thinking about taking this on as a career.
It's not an easy one, let me tell you. Back in my WWF days, we were on the road for 25 days straight, 5 days off, back to 25 days straight.
Wow.
In that 25 days, on Saturdays and Sundays, we'd do two matches,
wow,
a matinee and an evening show. So we were really working 30 times in that 25 days. It was brutal. It's tough. Your family life stinks.
Yeah.
All you have is the road, which, you know, we enjoy. Don't take don't take it wrong that way, because we did enjoy.
Maybe that's where you got some of the Mr. Outrageous.
That is actually where that came
from. Fill in some of the loose spots with some,
But, you know, the problem was a lot of us get in trouble because we get bored because we're always on the road. Every night, what do you have to do? After your match, you go out to the bar. Pretty soon you've drank too much. And right. I remember I was with Hulk Hogan back before I even got into this. And one guy is poking him in the chest. He's about 6'1". And Hulk is legitimate, you know, probably, I think he bills himself as 6'5". I think he's at least a solid 6'4". Okay. So he's not far off. Yeah. And the guy's poking him in the chest going, "You're not that big." And, you know, finally he ended up getting clobbered and going to sleep. But, you know, people, it's like, okay, I can pick on you. I've got all these beer muscles working, and, you know, let's see how tough you aren't. Oh, wait.
My girlfriend is watching.
That
kind of stuff. So that's an occupational hazard, I would imagine.
It is. It is. But, you know, that's part of it. And I was very fortunate. Most of the time I was the babysitter. Uh-huh. I was in charge, and whether I'd be driving a vehicle, hauling people, or really the road agent. So if I went to jail, I got fired.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
No, that's not cool.
And
you don't want to do that.
You know, and like everything, it is a business. And treat it as a business because it makes you money. And without that, guess what? You're broke.
Yeah. When did that stuff really boom? It's the 80s, right? When the McMahons got hold of it.
Yeah, well, 80s. It's when Hulk Hogan finished Rocky III.
Okay.
That was really, you know, getting to the top of it. Hulk Hogan at the time was working for the AWA and Vern Gagne in Minnesota.
Okay.
He lost 3 times to get the championship belt.
Okay.
2 of them were disputed. 1 was actually reversed. But the owner, Vern Gagne, would not give it to him because, you know, it wasn't his view of a championship wrestler. So what does he do? He goes and signs with Vince McMahon, goes in and beats the Iron Sheik, and becomes the biggest name in professional wrestling history.
Yeah.
At least modern time, but I'm sure he compares to the Gorgeous George and everybody else. So Hulk was really the icon. He did well, and I thank him and I actually went to his apartment and was told how to get into the business. Friends of mine walked away from him going, "Oh my God, this is so cool," and I walked away going, "I can't do that for a living. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard."
What did he tell you that sounded so bad?
Well, not that it was bad, but I just thought, you know, I'd seen pro wrestling on TV. I watched it as a kid.
Right.
And to go do it, I'm like, no. And my friends would come home. Oh, I work 10 minutes a night, and we go party all night. We travel all over the world. And I listened to these stories for 2 years. And finally, I turned around and like, you know what? Okay, I'll try it. And my friends, you know, and they were the Terminators back then, and they actually trained me. And got me going, and I actually outlasted all 3 of them put together with my career. I've over 30 years. Few injuries, but, you know, I don't care. You know, it's what I chose. And I actually get hurt worse being a stuntman than I did being a pro wrestler.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but we're supposed to have more padding, and, you know, but I'm one of the crazies they call in when they say, well, the shot is really, you know, it's a big shot, and we can't cheat it with padding. You got real tight clothing on, so you can't put any padding underneath. Can you fall on the concrete from 5 feet up? Yeah, that's what I do.
You could.
Yeah, because that's what we do in pro wrestling.
Yeah, and you're still doing it with a smile. So that's
It has been fun. It's opened many doors, and I've been very thankful that I was a pro wrestler, and, you know, most of the time was Mr. Outrageous. Did a little stint as Dr. Feelgood over at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas.
Okay.
The problem with that was the promoter on that one, Herb Abrams, the owner of the UWF, overdosed on drugs and died.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, that kind of put a damper on all that. I left that name go. I still have my TV tights with Dr. Feelgood on it, my smock from New Mercy Hospital. You know, the fun things, but, you know, that's part of life that I had to let go. And as sad as it was, but there are stupid people out there that will overdose on drugs when they have everything they ever wanted and needed. You know, but that's life.
That is life. Now, I saw that you have a couple things in development. I want to check that this is true. One is a movie called Attack of the Killer Hamster.
I'm supposed to be, you know, in that. They talked to me briefly. I don't know where it's at or what they're doing.
All right.
Like so much of Hollywood, or not so much, but there's plenty of people in Hollywood that are dreamers.
Well, things don't always get made for all kinds of reasons.
Well, you know, they got the greatest intentions, but they have no clue how to put it together.
All right.
I'm afraid that might be one of them. I don't know. I just haven't heard from them for over a year now. So I'm thinking it might be.
I was just interested in about the killer hamster and if it had legs. That was
I'm sure it probably has 4.
Probably has. Well, that would more than 4 would be even better. And then I saw there was another thing about a TV movie called Vape Wars.
Yes.
Is that a real thing? I mean, I imagine, if you're going to have a vaporizer, you're just going to get really high. Nobody wants to fight when they're that high. How can you have vape wars? What is that? Do you know what that is about?
I do briefly. I haven't shot my spot yet, but I have a bike that I bought for I bought it for a movie, and I happened to meet this director, and she's like, oh, yeah, she's looking me up, and she goes, wow. Dust Up, you are a crazy character in that. And I had my head shaved and a tattoo on the top of my head. And actually, in the end of the movie, I get scalped.
Yeah.
So they hold up the piece of skin with the tattoo on it. So it was pretty brutal looking. But she saw that and she goes, I want you in Vapors. And she made me Diablo. And I'm like the underground guy that's fighting the Vapors. So I'm not a vape fan. And so I ride in on this crazy Harley. Now, had a little bit of trouble getting together with her as to what her idea was, because if you know directors, they have a very direct opinion of what they think you should be, and I was thinking 180 on everything she thought. So right now, I told her, I says, I have an old pair of biker chaps, black chaps. Great. Would you wear those with no bottoms? I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? No.
Yes. Oh, no. No. We're just too outrageous. Why not?
That's true, but I also have daughters that I have to answer to.
Just in the back. You can have something in the front.
Well, what I ended up doing was taking an old pair of wrestling trunks, and I took the letters and had them sewn on the back. It says fun with a peace sign right on my ass. So I'm wearing the chaps with these red things. I've got knee-high my cowboy boots, that 16-inch Bowie knife stick in each boot, which will eventually come out in this show.
Yeah.
But then the vest is the mesh shirt is one that I wore as in Dust Up when I was playing that crazy character. And then I have a vest over that. And that's kind of what we've come up with for the idea. And I just come in and just start kicking ass, which I like.
So you're kind of a vigilante. You're not law enforcement. It doesn't sound like
Well, my shirt actually does say law enforcement. I actually made the badge for this, and it's called Disco City Fun Police. So her whole vibe was disco, which I don't know why, but, that's our director.
Yeah.
But, I just went with it. So I made up the badge, put it on a shirt that doesn't fit me. So it's I can't possibly button it up, but that's part of the cool
look. That's part of the fun.
And we're looking forward. They're going to shoot some promos with me up in the mountains where I'm just riding this badass chopper. The chopper actually has four real saw blades on the front fender. They're real. They're not completely sharp, but if you touch them, they'll take your skin off.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, they're that, that tough.
So once you get hit with the motorcycle, then the saw blades will just kind of continue to chew.
Yeah, exactly.
Through.
It'll cut my victims in half. And we've actually talked about a couple of movies doing that. And we actually put one together on one of my police bikes where saw blades came out of the saddlebags and basically would cut people's knees off. And then they'd come back, and as they were laying on the ground bleeding and looking up, I'd cut their head off driving by the other way.
So you are a nice guy.
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah, you're not going to let them sit there suffering with cut knees.
Well, I'd laugh at them, and then I'd cut their head off. Yeah,
but it's a kind of service. Now, you have a production company I saw. We started mentioning this a minute ago. It's called Worldwide Total Exposure. Is that your company?
That's not actually my company. Okay. I work for them. That's the company in Africa, started by the real machine gun preacher, Sam Childers.
Well, this was my question. Why is it called this, and why is it based in Kampala, Uganda? But so you got a story here.
Well, the story is, I met Sam Childers years ago on a red carpet, and we became friends and, did different things together. And I made my first trip to Africa 3 years ago, went and visited a couple of his orphanages. I couldn't go to South Sudan because of the civil war that had just broke out at that time. But that was all part of it, going up and, seeing this farm he developed, because the kids at the age of 15 get kicked out of the orphanages.
Right.
So what he did is he goes, well, what am I going to do? I can't just turn them loose on the street. They go to drugs, go to prostitution. They'll do whatever, they have to survive. So he started this farm. He's got a 1,000-acre farm in northern Uganda. It borders on the game preserve. So, and I happened to miss it the first time there. 40 elephants came walking out of the game preserve through his property. And what do you do with 40 elephants? Not a thing. They're going to do whatever they want. But to me, you know, that's one of the cool things in life. But anyways.
And who is this guy? You mentioned him. Like, I don't know who he is. Who is he?
He is actually, he was named by the Africans as the machine gun preacher. He was a badass biker, followed nobody, didn't really believe in God and any of that stuff, and ended up going to Africa and realizing he had a calling.
A calling, yeah.
And his calling was he started this orphanage, and if you watch the movie, the orphanage was attacked by Joseph Kony. If you remember 2012, yep, the Joseph Kony campaign, yeah. His soldiers, and burned to the ground. Well, Sam, you know, with the help of his wife at the time, rebuilt it stronger, and now he feeds, I think it's approximately 6,000, if not 7,000 meals a day to all the orphans and anybody who wants it over there.
Wow.
But
amazing.
It's not only it's in, you know, South Sudan, but it's now also in Uganda, mm-hmm. and also in Ethiopia.
Okay.
Now the farm he started, all these older kids, I mean, you know, young adults, work on the farm, so they're learning trades. They're learning farming, they're learning livestock, and they're learning building.
Yeah.
Right now they have a two-story, six-bedroom house built there. You know, they're just building like crazy. They've got tukus, which are big round buildings that I slept in one of them, and I think about 30 people could sleep in there, right. in bunk beds. They're that big, but all the food they're taking out of there is now going to the orphanages, so he's able to feed without having to buy it. Because his problem is nobody funds him.
Right.
He is all self-funding. No government would help him. I mean, most of them are broke anyway, so or they claim they are.
Right. So he's a guy that went over and had a calling and said, I need to do some good work. And so...
Yes.
Is in Uganda doing that?
Well, he's in Uganda, Ethiopia, and South Sudan. He has 7 orphanages right now.
Oh.
So, you know, he's done well, but he also hired me then, the first time over, to take pictures with the, as this company,
yeah.
on the red carpet over there in Uganda. So we did that, and now we've shot our first feature film called King of Darkness. It's a faith-based vampire film, which those two really haven't gone together.
Faith-based, so it's like a Christian vampire film.
It's a Christian vampire film.
And the Christians vampires, or are they against the vampires?
Well, they're...
That's the basic question.
But the vampires, you know, they're not Christian. Because they're evil. It's good versus evil.
Okay, that's what I'm checking out, is
yeah.
it? Yeah.
But it's an interesting concept, and when he first brought this to me, I said, well, you understand, a vampire movie has to have lots of blood, and has to have nudity. He goes,
yeah.
No, it doesn't. Like, okay, now that you know that.
Yeah.
And he goes, figure it out.
All right.
And so we've shot it. It's in the final stages of edit right now. I got a rough cut here about a month ago.
And you directed it.
I directed that. Okay. I was handed all, everybody was from Uganda. Everybody was black Ugandan, except for one guy that lived in Uganda, and he was my first white vampire. Because we all know vampires, they're white, right? Well, he comes in on a plane. Next thing you know, he's out biting black guys. Now we have black vampires. He disappears, and there we go. But the people hunting it down, the detective is not a Christian and really doesn't believe in that. And by the end, you know, his thing was, I don't think we could have gotten through this without believing.
Well, so now I'm going to be curious to see this when it comes out. Because when you say it like that, that... There are no vampires in the world of the film until this white vampire shows up and then starts biting everybody and infects them.
Yeah.
That sounds like the European colonial history and the evangelical history in Africa anyway.
Right.
So when you say it like that, it sounds like it's making a political point that is not supporting the Christian faith and the missionary mission and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm curious to see how it all comes out. And
me too.
Faith-based movies are really happening. I mean, here in Los Angeles, if you're in New York, you don't realize that, but it's a hot thing in literature and in films now. There are a lot of people that want faith-based stories.
Yeah, if you're in the process of making movies in L.A., New York, wherever, you realize that right now horror movies are way down for popularity and faith-based are way at the top.
Uh-huh.
5 years ago, it was completely the opposite. So it's a roller coaster ride. And,
okay.
But I've got more coming up, and we also have the Machine Gun 2 a Machine Gun Preacher 2 movie.
Okay.
That could be happening next spring.
Now, is the Machine Gun Preacher, does he really have a machine gun?
Yes.
He does.
And oh, yeah. He has quite a few.
And so, but in real life, did he have that? Did he use it?
That's the Africans, when they saw him, he walked with a Bible in one hand, a machine gun in the other, looking for Joseph Kony, was his number one target, but also rescuing kids. And now, I mean, I don't know what his numbers are there, but I'm sure he's rescued thousands of kids by now.
Wow.
And families. A lot of them, if you've seen the movie, I mean, one of the boys had to kill his own mother to spare his life.
Wow.
Well, then he became a soldier for Joseph Kony. From there, then he was rescued, and now, you know, he's living with Sam, and Sam actually adopted him,
nice.
Which is kind of cool.
So it's great. It's bringing some light to this stuff when we've heard about Joseph Kony and all that kind of thing, but this is like shedding the light on the other half of the other side of the story, which is the real people that are affected.
Well, the people that are affected and the good that's trying to come out of this and the fight that it takes to get that good,
right.
Which is big.
Yeah.
And it's more than I personally could do. Sam is in Africa approximately 8 months out of the year. The other 4 months, he's basically traveling around the world trying to raise money to pay for everything in Africa. So it's cost him his family, which is sad.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tough life. And, you know, like I said, he feels he has a calling for this. And till his last breath, he will be fighting for these kids from Africa. And like he says, I don't fight for Christians. I fight for every religion. That they have the freedom.
Well, that's good.
So that's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. All right, I want to totally change things
up.
Okay. All this stuff is great, but there's a specific reason that I invited you here today.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Well, we've met before. We worked before in Killjoy 4.
And it worked well for me. How did it work for you?
Well, you obliterated my head with a pie.
It doesn't get better than that. I don't think so.
So let's just tell people, in that film, it's about killer clowns, blah, blah, blah. I play a harlequin clown, which is a clown that thinks is smarter and prettier than everybody else. And you play Punchy, who is, tell us about Punchy.
Punchy is a hobo clown, and in the clown rankings, that's the lowest you can
get.
That's
the lowest.
That's like the beginner clown. You know, I'm like the apprentice or whatever you want to call it. I always felt that Punchy was, you know, not the sharpest tool in the shed, not real bright. But the director, John LeChaco, goes, oh, no, you know, you are. And actually, in Killjoy 4, where I smooshed your head.
Oh, yeah, it was great because,
yeah.
I mean, you back me up against the wall, and the pie comes, and then my head is gone.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Well, and you'd understand it. When you see the movie, you understand that this whiny little bitch harlequin clown, smash. You know, I had to put a stop to it. Fan mail came in from everywhere thanking me. They were so tired of listening to this harlequin.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's typecasting. That's what
I was typecasting.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, on both sides.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
What are you getting at there? You're saying I'm not the smartest?
Saying I'm the whiniest. Yeah.
Okay.
But here's what I found out afterwards. In that moment, when we're having the dialogue and you hit me, you know, you say some stuff in a kind of carny language.
Yes.
And I couldn't fully understand it because I don't speak carny, but I find out that you do speak carny.
Yes.
And so I'm fascinated about carny language. There are different dialects of carny. This is what I want to. You need to please educate me. Tell me some stuff about carny language. I don't know anything, so tell me something I don't know.
Okay, way back in the beginning of pro wrestling hooked up with the carnivals. And that's, you know, that was their stages. They wrestled during the, you know, the carnival. And but all the carnival people had their own special language, so they could talk. And it's basically like a pig Latin.
Yeah.
And they could talk and nobody else could understand them.
Okay.
Now, I've actually been in carnivals and heard somebody say something, I stop. Slowly turn around, look them right in the eye, and walk right up to them, and I repeat what they said, and their mouth would, you know, their jaw would drop like, oh, I'm sorry. And, you know, not realizing that, guess what? I speak carny.
You speak carny. And how did you learn carny? Just hanging around? Or?
Well, no, it was part of the pro wrestling. Learned a whole new language. Just, you know, why we did it, I don't know. It was there when I got there. It was there when I left. But when John LeChaco brought Killjoy 3 to me, and we started talking. He goes, I want you to play Punchy. I've developed, you know, John Lithgow, which I love. I've been in every one of his movies.
Bioslime and Blood Gnomes and all that. He was here a couple weeks ago.
That's what I heard. Well, Blood Gnomes was the very first one that I was in with him, and he liked me, and he wrote my part bigger and bigger and bigger, and so that was always fun. But in talking about Punchy and developing the character, and he says, yeah, you know, I'm going to keep true to you, and I'm going to make him kind of a pro wrestler. And I says, well, you understand, we have a special language. He's like, oh, you do? And so Punchy never spoke English in the first two.
Okay.
Until, I believe, the end of four. I think he maybe said one word. And now in five, he's speaking a lot more in English, but he still does his carny. But it's difficult because as an actor, you have to memorize the line. But then you have to memorize the line and try to decipher it in your head as you're doing it, and I can't do it.
You mean so, to translate it on the fly from English, regular English, to carny.
Right.
Yeah, that's hard.
So basically I can read it and do it, or I can make it up and do it. But so I would have to make cue cards, and especially when we were on trial, when Killjoy was on trial, and I had some, you know, mini dialogues, but I had to be rambling, and I had to write them all out on cards so I could, you know, I can instantly read and make up the Kiazarni for the Wheezerk on the Giazab for the Kiazord.
Yeah, now what'd you say there?
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah.
So you want me to give away all my trade secrets?
No, you don't have to totally give them away. Tell us some other things. Do a little carny. Say anything you want. You want to...
I just did. Well would you miss it?
I did miss it. I need a little more. I need a little... I haven't had my minimum daily allotment of carny dialect.
I mean, the cool part was, you know, as an actor, I got to Piazunchi, you know, together. Put Punchy together. Yeah.
So, but
there, and I mix both styles. There's a...
Yeah, what are the styles?
You put in an IE or an IZ into it. So Piazunchi. Or Piazunchi. So it could be either one.
So you just drop these little...
Throw them in anytime. It's the Pig Latin of it. You know, okay. You put this into the words, and you don't have to do every word.
Right.
But, you know, and it's so funny because, you know, Trent, who plays Killjoy, is so awesome because, he'll look at me with that sad face and go, I don't understand a fucking thing you said.
So you said you mixed the two dialects. So
right.
One dialect is...
The IEs or the IZs.
So that's...
Or the IAs, you know, whichever way you want to
okay.
look at.
Okay, and... Do they use one dialect, carnival people, north, south, east, west? I mean, is there...
It was more east, west,
okay.
I think, back in the day. And, you know, because we've become such a, you know, a combined society now, I think, you know, you find it all over. Now, most of the wrestlers nowadays do not speak it. They can't understand it. Half of them haven't even heard of it. Okay. And we're happy not to pass it on to them because, okay. you know, they're all... You know, wet behind the ears, snot-nosed little brats that don't need it.
Right.
In my opinion. My humble opinion.
But the carnival people still use it.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And we actually, that's about probably 8 or 10 years ago, we were on tour and we ran into a carnival in a bar. And they started picking on one of our little people. It's not politically correct, even though in the wrestling world we call them midgets.
Right.
They call themselves midgets. And he ended up getting up on the pool table ready to kick the guy in the face, the carny. And so
you'd think the carnies would know better because they hang out with those people, but maybe
they
don't anymore.
No, the wrestling and carnivals don't go together and haven't for years. So most of them are too young and they don't understand that we understand. So they started talking amongst themselves and we answered them. And they're again jaw dropping, mouth wide open, like, oh my God, they understand what we're saying.
But I would imagine that carnival people, if they ran into a group of wrestling guys and there were some little people there, that the carny guys, why would they start picking on the little people? You would think that they would get them, but maybe they have a bad, they're like, oh, the freaks are below us. I don't know.
It could be that. It could just be those beer muscles working. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are stupid, like I said. I mean, when you're sitting there poking Hulk Hogan in the chest and you're basically, you know, the height of his chest,
right.
You know, you have to really tip your head back to look up to him. What are you thinking? I mean, you know, no matter what, he's big.
Yeah.
He's freaking big.
Yeah.
But anyways.
So that's the Carney language.
Yeah. So that's Kiazarni.
That's Kiazarni. All right. So then in a way, like anybody could speak it. You can just you could just start picking it up and dropping it in and practicing like kids do with Pig Latin. You get better at it.
And there's the whatever they call in the new stuff that they're doing, you know, the rappers. It's the same kind of thing.
Same kind of thing. Yeah. All right. So I came into this thinking I know nothing about Carney language. I'm never going to be able to get it. But now you're telling me I could possibly...
Well, you're a Harlequin. I'm not quite sure if that's going to
work.
Yeah,
that might not work. That might not work. That was a big moment for me. I really enjoyed being on that set. And I really enjoyed that moment where you really obliterate my head with the pie.
Well, it was a cool spot, and, you know, when you see the movie and you realize, I mean, yeah, we used some Hollywood magic in there, but it looked pretty dang cool.
Yeah, it looked pretty good.
And, you know, next thing you know, there's this blood-stained whipped cream, and his head's gone. And, yeah, it was a nice effect.
It was a nice effect.
It definitely sold the spot, and,
yeah,
I had no problem doing it.
Now, I got a question that's related to this. I usually ask it a little later. For a number of years now, I have told family and friends that they can hit me in the face with a pie anytime. So here's my question. You're going to do this thing that I've been doing, which is to give permission to someone to hit you in the face with a pie. So instead of it being an aggressive thing, it's going to be full of love. They throw it with love and generosity. You receive it with love and generosity. It can be anyone living or dead, real or imagined. Yeah, who would you like that to be?
Probably go back to my dearly departed grandmother.
Your grandmother?
Not that she had a mean bone on her body or anything like that, but I think she had a good sense of humor, and she enjoyed the things that I did, and I think for her to do that, she'd have a chuckle out of that.
Yeah. Did she ever hit you in the face with the pie when
never,
she was alive?
No.
Yeah.
She never hit me, period.
She never hit you.
She was a sweet woman.
Sweet old, so you want like a sweet old granny to come up and hit you
well,
in the face
with
the pie.
Well, my granny, because then I'd have a chance to see her again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. Now it becomes a moment between the two of
you. That's true.
And so I'm going to give you a card here. There's two of them. And you can pick whichever one you want. And it basically says, it's always okay to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime without warning, which you now, since we've met, you can do that to me. And you can pass this along to other people.
Okay.
Yeah, it's obviously friends and family, right? You don't want to open season strangers walking up to you in the street eating with a pie. But
you know, I mean, people do get a little carried away, and you know, like the thing with Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, you know,
I've had a few do it to me, and it's like, you know, don't please just go away, leave me alone.
So if you're listening to the show and you don't know Al personally, don't walk up and hit him in the face with a pie because...
I will drop you.
You will find out why Mr. Outrageous...
I will put you to sleep, and then when you wake up, I'll knock you out again after explaining why I put you to sleep.
I'm so glad we're having fun like this. How old were you when you first ran away from home?
I'm trying to think. I don't know that I ever did run away. I faked it once.
You faked it?
And the best part, I was... in the upstairs of a house, I was, I believe, in the sixth, going into the seventh grade. I think it was that summer, and I'd gotten in trouble. I was confined in my bedroom for the whole summer.
Oh, my God.
The whole summer.
That's incredible.
My dad was a local cop, but my mom couldn't handle me. At the time, they were still together. But there was little attics with doorways, you know. And what I did was I hooked a wire to the bed that was in front of one of the doorways. So I went in the door, closed it, and then pulled the bed in front of the door. So how could he apply? He couldn't be in there. The bed's in front of there. So and I dropped stuff out the window, and, you know, she thought I jumped. Thought I was gone, and I showed up like 8 hours later. And
in the interim, you just hung out in the dark closet.
Yeah.
Yeah, was that satisfying to you in some way?
Well, I got even.
You got even. Oh, because they were freaked out that you were gone.
Well, they were freaked out, and, you know, I didn't think it was fair that, you know, I got in trouble for the whole summer. My brother didn't get anything kind of thing. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, because I was the oldest, and I should have known better, and blah, 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 blah. You know, so.
All that crap.
Yeah, all the crap. So, yeah, I got even on that one. I mean, did it get me anything? No, I sat in the attic in the dark for hours.
Well, that's why I'm asking. Like, what did you get out of it? But yeah, that they thought you really had taken off.
My mom had panicked, and but she didn't even call my dad because she was scared that, you know, he'd be mad then at her. And so yeah, it wasn't a good time of my life. And you know, Yeah. Everything moves on, but
faked running away.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't believe I ever did run away ever.
All right.
But that was, I remember the fake.
You remember that? Yeah. You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
I do.
I don't know. Do you?
No.
Really?
No. I go to bed at 10:30, 11:30 at night, and I'm up anywhere from 4:30 to 7:30 in the morning. And if I wake up at 4:30, I go for, many times, say 5-6 mile hike that time of the day, especially in the summertime because it's much cooler here.
Yeah.
I take my dog. We head off, and we'll do 5, 6, 7, 8 miles. And
but bedtime, nothing weird, nothing quirky.
No, I'm not a freak or anything.
All right.
Well, the funny part is, I joke now. I sleep very well at night, so my karma must be good.
All
right. I straightened a lot of things out, had a lot of bad things happen that I did, through childhood and adolescence. But, I get good night's sleeps almost every single night, and I'm kind of happy about that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to change that.
No, you seem happy, and you've mentioned now a couple of times that when you were younger, you were the bad guy. You were a kid. And so something turn for you? Something changed for you? Or you're still the same person and now, whatever. But
I changed just the part where I realized my life wasn't going well. I mean, work-wise, it was fine.
Sure.
But I wasn't happy. And, angry at everybody, that kind of thing. And I think many males go through that. And a lot of it was to do with my upbringing. And I had to get things straightened out with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I did that when I was 33 or 30. Okay. 30.
All right.
Somewhere in there. And we finally had a big, to-do. And I told him after that, I go, you know what? I'm no longer afraid of you. You tell me the sky was blue. I go, no, it's green. I would instantly lie for whatever reason. I don't know, just out of fear.
Yeah.
And then, went through some things with my mom and, and family life, things like that. And then I realized, you know what? Everybody else isn't the problem. Look in the mirror. There's your problem. And once I fixed that, things got much better.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm happy. I sleep. life is good. Well,
it's all okay, yeah.
Well, when you think about it, you wake up at, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, you can't sleep.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about? Something woke you up.
Something.
And I don't have that anymore. Now, it could mean I'm brain dead, but got plenty of work. Hollywood's been awesome for me. I said actually last year was my worst year in the last 6 years, and I only had 103 jobs in Hollywood.
That's your worst year
in six years. Only because I set this benchmark if I wanted 2 jobs every week all year. And I don't care. I mean, I did do vacations, things like that. So I could have reached it, but I want that 104 jobs minimum.
So that's some stunt thing, some acting thing,
everything.
Some wrestling. I mean, they got all these things,
everything
together.
And so I'm able to make a living. I have not had a real job, not even one day, in over 30 years.
Isn't that great?
So I'm happy with that. Yes, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
A lot of people are very jealous and, not what I care. But I figured it out. I actually do seminars now. I did one last week in Studio City. I did one the weekend before.
How not to have a full-time job.
How to make acting work for you.
All right.
And
what do you tell people?
Well, number one, it's up to you.
Yeah.
Hustle.
Yeah.
That's my only word. And I remember, last time in Africa, I was busy online. Thank God we have internet over there. I was submitting myself for jobs for when I came back from Africa.
From Uganda.
From Uganda. And I don't take anything for granted. I may have plenty of work coming up. I want more.
Yeah.
And I don't want a real job. I don't want to have to go wait tables or be a bouncer or any of that.
Yeah.
I want to be an actor and a stuntman. Yeah. And you can do it. You just have to figure out how.
Yeah.
And my biggest thing to people is, what can you give any production that they don't have? What makes you invaluable? And once you figure that out, now you have a chance of making it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we wait on our agent. They suck, or most of them. Managers, they're worse. It's up to you.
It is up to you.
So that's the biggest thing. And I've been very fortunate and very blessed. I think it was about 3 years ago or 4 years ago, I actually averaged 3 jobs every week for the whole year. It was over 160 jobs that year.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, but that's you know, and my agent helped me in some, my manager on some, but it's mostly been me.
You got to hustle.
The nice part now is I audition for maybe 20 or 25% of my stuff. Right. Everything now is people I've already worked for, or I've been recommended, and I don't have to audition. They call me and say, will you be on my project? Or I worked with you 3 years ago.
Well, that's how this town, that's when this really starts to go.
And once you figure that out, but you got to get a good reputation. You blow it once, your reputation's shot. Right. All of us that have worked anything in this town, we've been on some really bad sets.
Well, everybody.
You know, you go home, you never say a word on set, you go home, and if nobody's there, you can yell at the wall, yell at the door, yell at the couch, anything, yell at the dog. You know, and that's your only frustration to release it.
That's right.
Because don't do it on set because now you've become a problem.
You become the problem person.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, people won't hire you.
Right.
So
right.
I haven't done that because I get hired all the time, and I'm very thankful for that. I'm very blessed to be that way. But it takes a lot of hard work.
Yeah, hard work. Yeah. Something I like to do on this show is to anagram things, right? Take the letters of your name, for example, mix them up. What else does it spell? So I anagrammed a few things. Here, I'm just going to... Let's look at them first. Check out these first two. I just anagrammed your name, Al Burke.
Okay.
The first thing I got was this. Why don't you read that?
Kale rub.
Kale rub. You're not a vegan, are you?
No.
Vegetarian?
No.
Okay. Anything with kale rub, does that ring a bell in any way?
Yeah, no, sorry. No.
I think the image that I got was in New York City, they still have these kind of these Russian bath houses.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go in there, and one of the treatments they have is they whack you with these oak branches.
That sounds like fun.
Right? They like just like smack you.
Right. Big.
And so I thought if you can have an oak leaf whacking, you kale rub, you know, it's L.A., maybe there's some kind
of... Yeah, kale definitely is an L.A. thing, but yeah. I've tried it maybe less than a handful of times. Yeah. I think maybe 3 times. Not, give me a burger.
You don't like kale?
No.
Well, this is more like a skin exfoliant. Maybe if we kind of toasted the kale in the oven and then rubbed it on us, it would release...
You're getting kinky on me. Sorry, homie ain't going there.
All right, I'm just checking it out. The other one,
yeah,
though,
see, he's fishing again.
I'm fishing. The other one, Al Burke anagrams to ear bulk. And you're a big guy. I bet you got some bulky ears. You got, right? You think your ears...
Well, I don't have cauliflower ears like a lot of boxers and wrestlers do. So I've been fortunate there.
No cauliflower ear.
No.
No.
Even though I belong to the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Which is
a group of all pro wrestlers, both current and retired, but also boxers.
Okay.
And we meet over in Vegas now.
Yeah.
And I'll be heading there in a couple of months. And... Yeah, we basically just sit around and talk about old war stories and this road trip and that road trip and when so-and-so went to jail and we lucked out, we didn't. And, stuff like that. And it's just a nice meeting. But
no, you don't have, I'm looking now, you have like normal.
Normal ears,
normal ears. They're not bulky or.
No, I've got no extra wide spots, so.
All right. Some of these, we strike out sometimes, you know. Here's the next few. Mr. Outrageous. One of the things, read this first one.
Outrage rumors.
Wait a minute. Outage. Outage rumors.
Outage.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, it is outage. Yeah. Outage rumors.
Here's what I figured.
Okay.
You're Mr. Outrageous. When you're around, the lights might go out.
They could.
Right?
Yes.
Outage rumors. Mr. Outrageous.
Yeah, but
outage
if
rumors.
I'm there, they're not going to be rumors because I'm going to be doing it.
Lights are going to go out. The lights are gonna
probably turned them out, and guess what? I'm having fun.
There you go. All right, so that one makes it a little outage rumors. I liked this one, Tea Rooms Guru. I imagined you as a guru for some people having tea, that you might have some words of wisdom to drop on them.
I got words of wisdom for everybody, but I don't do tea rooms.
You're not into tea?
No.
You like coffee?
No. No. I've never touched coffee. I drank iced tea for a while. Now I don't even drink soda anymore. Beer once in a while. Right. Hardly ever a mixed drink, and mostly water. I mean, I'm trying to keep healthy. I'm getting old, and I need to,
All right, so my image is of you in Bangladesh in his kind of tea room. No, that's not. None of that's working.
No.
Now, this one I thought would be good, perhaps, as punchy. A rogue's tumor.
I don't know what a rogue's tumor would be.
Well, you know, a tumor is a tumor. Anyone can have a tumor. But I think if you're a rogue, it's probably worse.
Because it's traveling, yeah. Oh, yeah, that tumor could be right up your behind. I don't know.
All right, okay. All right, here's the last one. Now, this one doesn't make any sense at all. Mega Sour Tour. I thought if you had a band, that would be a good... Like, I saw the T-shirt that on front it said Mr. Outrageous, and on the back it said Mega Sour Tour, and it had a listing of the cities.
Mm-hmm. You know, I could buy that, except Mr. Outrageous don't play instruments.
Hmm.
So,
all right.
So you know, musical, I mean, I've been hired to do a couple of even singing spots in Hollywood, and not the best singer. I mean, I get paid good money, so I don't care. I mean, I've got a Corona commercial online.
Yeah, that's right.
If you punch in Corona and Mr. Outrageous and Biker, I had to learn a very old-fashioned Spanish song and recreate it. And I learned it in Spanish. And then I get down there and they go, oh, no, that's Spanish. We want Spanglish.
Oh.
So I had to relearn it because they wanted the you know, like I'm a gringo that just don't quite get it.
Right, yeah. That makes more sense. So you had to kind of...
So I had to relearn it.
Do carny language in a way.
Almost.
Spanglish is a kind of mashup.
Yeah, it was English-Spanish. So.
Things together. That's
and
funny.
So they wanted it just off enough so, you know, the Spanish people could laugh at me.
Exactly.
But I did find out that this commercial played in the Corona theater, the Corona-owned movie theaters.
Okay.
And everybody in the crowd would sing along with us. This song is so beloved. And, the actual, the main actor, not the one I played, but the other guy, died in a plane crash that his own private plane. He was like 40 years old, big mega movie star.
Recently, gone. Right?
Well, this was quite a while ago.
Oh, quite
I think
ago.
Probably
okay.
30, 40 years ago.
All right. Okay.
But the first thing I saw them on was they were riding police motorcycles, old Harleys, doing all these stunts. And believe me, I'm a stuntman. I couldn't touch what they were doing. They were that good.
The Mexican guys.
And they sang the song while they were doing
it. I love when you go to Mexico, they have old motorcycles there. The old police
old
Harleys.
Old cars, everything.
Are they incredible? But the old Harley police, they're really beautiful. Really, that's what I was checking out. All right, here's another one. So far, I've basically struck out with all of these animals.
Pretty much.
None of them is... ear bulk didn't work. Outage rumors, but that, you know, that didn't work. Punchy the Clown. Anagrams too. Why not clench up?
You know, Punchy don't clench. Punchy fights.
But doesn't he clench his fists before?
Well, yeah, before I hit somebody, but that's it. By the time you realize, oh, he's clenching his bang, you're out.
The rumor of outage is already happening. So anyway, that might fit.
I mean, that's okay, yeah.
Why not clench up? I mean, Punchy greets every situation
with a clenched fist.
Punchy
is very big, physical. He's supposed to be the behemoth.
Right.
And even in Killjoy 3, when we were in this boxing ring in China, my gloves were extra large on that one, which they realized later. Maybe a little too large. Not my call, but, you know, hey, it was fun.
The gloves are too large. All right, well, I think I have one more here. Oh, yeah, here you go. Here's the last one.
I speak carny.
The last one is I speak carny. I know there's two different ways. There's several ways to spell carny, but... So, I speak carny. One of the things that it anagrams to is risky canapé. You know, poison hors d'oeuvres, risky canapés.
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
not ringing any bells. Creaky pains.
But that, yeah, just being old and all the physicality.
Creaky pains, yeah. The pesky crania. Like bad brain. It's like the Ramones song.
Yeah,
I know.
That would be a typical Punchy thing because, you know, my opinion, like I said earlier, Punchy isn't the sharpest tool, but... You know, the director says, oh, yes, he is. And I started the whole union with all the clowns to back when you met your demise. That's what all that was about, because Punchy unionized the clowns, so there were no more levels.
Well, yeah, there was a little power vacuum, and that's why my character steps in to try to take the reins.
And how'd that work for you?
Well, it didn't work well for me. Punchy basically flattens the organization.
Yeah, and Punchy basically makes all clowns equal now. Yes. So, you know, there again, you know, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? I mean,
he's a communist.
Yeah, I don't know.
He doesn't seem like
a communist.
I was
going to say, is he a Trumpist? Nah.
He doesn't seem like a
communist. I wouldn't want to give Punchy any credit for that.
No, let's not give Punchy any crap. The last thing that I at Anagram 2 was apiary necks. I just thought that was funny because, you know, an apiary is where the bees hang out.
Right.
And the one thing they don't have there is necks. Bees have no necks. Do bees have necks?
You know, I've never checked that out. I wouldn't know.
Not as far as I know.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I guess I hope not. Otherwise, it'd look kind of weird flying around.
The giraffe bees.
Yes.
So all these anagrams have basically gone nowhere.
You know, I mean, the punchy one isn't bad. Why not clench up? But, yeah.
I'm tempted to say it's a little on the nose.
Yeah, I'd say no.
That's a pun.
I'd say, you know.
See what I did there?
Strike three, you're out.
On the nose, yeah. Again, you never know. Occasionally, I'll do this and somebody will say, that's totally me.
Yeah.
Or I'll take their
production. Well, that's because they're sucking up to you.
No, they don't need to do that.
Oh, well, I don't.
Nobody listens to this show. Then I have no power.
Oh, ouch. What am I doing here then?
Oh, wait. I wasn't supposed to tell you that.
We have one viewer. Wait, are they calling? No, they don't even have a phone.
We have a, yeah. Did I ask you this child about this question about as a child you had an imaginary friend?
No.
Did you have an imaginary friend as a child?
No. I didn't have any friends.
No friends? You have a brother.
Yeah, but that didn't work well either.
Like the little brother you never wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the time I got, you know, confined in my room for the whole summer, I shot him between the eyes with a BB gun from upstairs when I was already in, you know, I think I had a week out or a month out. And so when I shot him, then I got the rest of the summer vacation.
It's a pretty good shot.
Oh, a hell of a shot.
Yeah, you were really proud of yourself.
Well, the funny part was, you know, my mom, you know, my brother came in crying, and mom goes, give me the gun. And I had a pea shooter, so here you go. My brother's out there, bam, shot him again. My mom was waiting for that, you know. I had to smarten up at that point. But, yeah, so she got both guns.
Yeah.
But she got the good one.
Yeah, she got the good one. And where did you grow up?
I grew up mostly in Minnesota.
Oh, Minnesota.
Minnesota, don't you know?
All right, you got a little Minnesota thing, yeah.
And, but my dad was racing for Harley-Davidson, so part of my childhood was in southern Georgia, down in Waycross, down by the Okefenokee Swamp, because he actually raced in Daytona, Daytona Beach, when it was just the beach. There wasn't a raceway. So they raced on the beach was the main straightaway, and then on the back side was the frontage road.
Wow.
And so the pit crew would handle me and let me know when I could run to the ocean and collect shells, and then I'd stand there with all the shells waiting for them to give me the okay to run back across the track.
Yeah.
So it was a live track, yeah.
That, yeah, and these kids running around. And, yeah. So he was a motorcycle racer.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So that got me. I was very fortunate because I got to ride bikes. I think the first time was like the age of three.
Yeah.
And all my friends, their parents were like, oh, you know, you can't have a bike until you're 18, and you know, you have to be an adult. And my dad, you know, what do you want? Here.
Yeah.
So, but that's helped a lot in the stunt part of it. Yeah. I now own four police motorcycles, the police Kawasaki's, like the old Chips bikes, mm-hmm. and I rent those out to production, and okay. I ride them and stuff. So, yeah, it's another way to make me more useful to production. And
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't had a motorcycle in a while. I kind of want one again. But riding it around L.A. is, it's kind of asking for trouble.
It is, but when your agent calls and says, you have an audition, even from here, it's in Santa Monica at 5 o'clock on Friday night. There's no good part about that.
Right.
On my police bike, I put on my police helmet, no badge, but black and white helmet, and I put on my police jacket with no patches or no badge on that. And I come riding up, and everybody parts like
they
the
just
sea.
Get, yeah.
And I just cruise right on through.
Right, you got the mustache.
Oh, yeah.
You probably got the sunglasses.
Oh, yeah.
And they, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I can throw on my aviators, and yeah, it's all good.
Now, we're pretty much done here. We've covered all our time. We got all the stuff. You've educated me about the Carney language, which is good. And I'm ready to do the outro of the show.
Okay. Now, one thing, if we got a quick moment, we didn't touch on is Feast of Fear, John Lechago's latest movie.
Well, what? Tell me about that.
That was the one. A bunch of us got together. Ty, who was Freak Show in Kildare, we got together and we decided nobody's giving us money to shoot our own movies.
Right.
You know, we work for Charles Band, Full Moon, make him a ton of money. Everybody else is making money. We're not. We're getting a measly $100 or $200.
Right. Actor life.
Actor life. And so we decided we made up our own movie. John wrote it and directed it. We put it together. Well, Ty unfortunately ran out of money. We ran over budget, which happens. So I stepped in with another $25,000. We finished it. It's off to distribution. It's been to Hong Kong. It's been to Cannes. We've had a couple of small deals try to be made. We weren't happy with them, so we passed.
Okay.
But anyways, we're doing our own thing. Feast of Fear. And basically, it's the big bad wolf versus the pig. So, yeah, we kind of stole some ideas there. And I'm not sure John really wrote it that way originally. Well, Tom Devlin did the outfits, which are phenomenal, 1313 effects.
Okay, all right.
He was on that movie, was it Face to Face or Face Off?
Face Off.
Face Off.
With
the special effects people.
Yeah. Face Off was the...
The TV show, the movie.
That was the movie.
Face to Face, I think, was the FX thing about special effects. And he made both of these outfits. So, very cool looking. Even the pig's ears would wiggle.
Yeah. You know, and in this one, I hope the pig is the bad guy.
Actually, the pig's the good guy.
The pig's the good guy. All right, because that's...
You know, at first, you don't know.
At first, you don't know.
Now, the cool part was, the actor who did the pig was just an actor.
Right.
He couldn't do anything physical, so I had to put on the pig outfit. So, unbelievably pretty, Victoria Levine.
Yeah.
I had to take this big hatchet and just chop her to pieces. In her nakedness, blood everywhere. I love my job.
You got a really twinkle in your eye as you say.
Oh, yeah, that. No, it's good. It's been cool, but things like that. Yeah. Victoria DeMar came in and, did some stuff there too, so we had her. And
all right, Feast of Fear.
Yeah, Feast of Fear.
Trying to get it distributed. All right. Well, let us know when it comes out.
We'll
do a little plug about that. Well, I would like to thank my guest, the very funny, charming, and indestructible Mr. Outrageous Al Burke, for coming in this week. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, this is what they...
Woohoo!
You can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. So far, no one has written in for a mug.
So sad.
There's still time. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, but without Al Burke.